Miles Davis says, so what? And I'm going to tell you, so what? I'm Amy Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash. We're building bridges.
How Jaquita went bananas, hiring death squads to kill its own workers. Verdict, guilty.
In a landmark legal case, Jaquita Banana was convicted by a federal court of funding a paramilitary death squad, the United Self-Defense Force of Colombia. They murdered thousands of workers and used Jaquita ports and boats to move cocaine and weapons.
This is the first time a U.S. corporation has been held accountable for committing human rights abuses in another country. We're joined by Professor Terry Call, who was an expert in that case, to find out what happened and the impact this case will have. Terry, it's a pleasure to have you with us. I have the utmost respect for your years and years of work around the Jaquita case and so many others of this type of abuse perpetrated by U.S. corporations.
Thank you.
Well, Terry, what was the Jaquita case about? And what had to be done to prove in a court that these atrocities were actually occurring?
Well, first of all, a jury returned a verdict in favor of the plaintiffs, who were family members of workers and peasants who had been killed by a right-wing paramilitary, the Autodefensas Unidas de Colombia, the AUC, I'll call them from now on. It returned a verdict saying that the eight plaintiffs would receive an unprecedented $38.3 million because of Jaquita's complicity in what the AUC had done. Its complicity, the jury found, was in supporting paying the AUC, which subsequently was responsible for the atrocities that happened in the banana producing, not all the atrocities, by the way, but most of the atrocities in the banana producing regions of Santa Marta and Urubá. So the verdict was, first of all, that the AUC had caused the deaths of these plaintiffs, the plaintiffs and their families, and that Jaquita in turn had violated Colombian law by failing to act as a reasonable business person, and also by knowingly providing substantial assistance to a group, this is a terrorist group, knowing, being able to foresee that they would use this for assistance for atrocities and for the commission of atrocities. And finally, for providing a substantial assistance to this group, that meant it would then provide a more serious risk to others. So that is what the case was about. I should add that Jaquita's version of, or Jaquita's story in response to this, was that the company was being extorted by the AUC and that they had to give this money in order to continue their business practices in the banana producing regions of Colombia. They actually produced a memo calling the cost of doing business in Colombia, in which they said, this is the cost of doing business. The memo, by the way, did not claim extortion. It just said it was the cost of doing business.
Well, let's break it down a little bit more. Let's get to the facts. I mean, who were the plaintiffs? What actually happened? I mean, most of us don't give a rat's ass, to be quite honest, about the cost of doing business. We care that there is a friendly yellow banana image, a company in the U.S. that is paying dollars to death squads to kill its own workers. What in the world is that about? What actually happened? Let's really paint the gruesome picture that deserves to be painted against these peasant workers who are actually working for Chiquita?
Well, some of them are working for Chiquita. Some of them owned lands in the area and were forced off their lands by the violence of the AUC. Before I say that, let me just say this is a story of turning the tables, if I could put it that way. Chiquita is probably the very first multinational corporation in the United States. It's the first one that moved beyond U.S. borders to move into Latin America, in particular Central America, Colombia, Ecuador later. And it had a practice, actually, as in its old guise of United Fruit, of exporting labor practices and land practices from the United States that had already been deemed illegal, irresponsible, immoral, whatever language you want, and actually exporting those practices back to Central America outside the United States. So the founders of Chiquita were actually known as the Cecil Rhodes of Central America. In other words, they were the people who used practices or who permitted practices like lynching, different forms of not overt, but more subtle forms of feudalism or slavery. So that's what used to happen. And what the verdict represents is the statement that not only are we not going to export, or is it not permissible to export those kinds of practices, but it is also a verdict, and Mimi, you're an attorney, you might be able to explain this better than I can. It's a verdict that actually used Colombian law to explain and show that what Chiquita did in Colombia was actually against Colombian law, not just U.S. law. And that means that it's a kind of, as I said, it's kind of turning the tables. It's a Forbes called it a shot against the bow of multinationals, that they cannot anymore or should not anymore use practices in countries that are both illegal in those countries, but also generally illegal in ours. So that's the big unprecedented story, and very important one, I think. What lay behind it is really what you asked about. And let me go there a little bit. Banana corporations can only operate in certain kinds of soils and climates. And that means there are certain places that they must operate. In Latin America, that's Colombia, which was really the first banana company when Panama was part of Colombia. And it's also Central America and now Ecuador. So in operating in those areas, there, what a multinational needs is a matter of debate. Some multinationals believe that they don't need to own the land. They don't need to control the land. They just need to control the production of bananas, the labor that produces bananas. So others, in this case it would be Chiquita, went from saying we can just work with domestic Colombian producers and let them deal with their labor any way they want. But what they did, which is what they decided in 1984, what they did in 1988, they reversed course and said, now we're going to move in and become the largest landowner in the banana producing regions, which means that the labor problem is no longer mediated by domestic producers. It's what they call the labor problem. The labor that they use is no longer mediated by domestic producers, but is now going to be mediated by Chiquita. Now, one of the issues for the long history of Chiquita, from United Fruit to United Brands to what is now Chiquita, has been what kind of labor is appropriate in banana producing areas. And if you go way back, they didn't want to use domestic labor. They didn't want to use indigenous labor. They thought They thought they had these very, if you look back in Chiquita's records, they had these very racist ideas that these people wouldn't work and they would import, say, Italians or other workers that they thought would do a better job in the region. Now, those practices are over. And in today's region, the workers are domestic. They're Colombians. And in the case of the banana or in the banana regions, two things happened. One is these regions were the center of a great deal of violence in Colombia's own ongoing civil war. And that violence tended to be between different forces, some paramilitaries on the left, like the FARC and the ELN, at least they started on the left, and others on the right, which eventually became the AUC, the case that Chiquita just lost. So you've got a lot of violence in the banana producing regions, and the violence has to do with many things. One of them is labor organizing. So you start seeing that leftist groups start organizing banana workers into a union. And that union succeeds in really beginning to raise wages, beginning to look for better working conditions, et cetera, et cetera. These are not happy outcomes for Chiquita now as the largest landowner in the region. So Chiquita begins to see that all violent groups are not equal, or all armed groups are not equal. And they begin to see that the right-wing paramilitaries that are being formed by the cattle and banana producers, the domestic Colombian cattle and banana producers, have the same interests they do, which is control of land and control of labor.
So what did Chiquita get out of it? How do they translate this into profits?
Well, it's very simple. If you control the land, you become the largest monopoly producer and you work with large domestic banana interests, for example, Colombian interests, to do two things. One is to seize more and more land. And the way that happens is, you know, there's in the banana producing regions, there's close to 1 million people who are displaced. And I know we're in a different time, but if you look back at that time, Colombia was the country producing the most internally displaced people in the world. It was also one of the huge out-migrations at that point into Venezuela. So you've got huge violence going on. Small producers, small farmers, peasants, etc., are fleeing their land. This land is then snapped up by Chiquita. The problem for Chiquita is it's illegal to just take over somebody's land. You have to have title to the land. And this is a big issue. This was actually a big issue in the trial as well, is how did Chiquita not just help pay for the violence that was occurring that made people flee their land, but also how did it have to work to try to build what was a kind of legal facade? It's not legal, but you can't say you own land if you don't have the title to the land. So there's a lot of title laundering. There's a lot of other things like that. Now, the other thing that happens is...
Well, how else did they get the land? It would seem to me that title fraud might be one issue, but there were mass killings, which Chiquita knowingly was involved in, both to thieve the land for its own production. And I imagine that as workers were organizing, whether it was by the FARC or other sources at some earlier time, that they were antithetical to these practices, and thus came the slaughter of innocents, of the workers. Is that the kind of paradigm that we're looking at?
Well, I think you have to be careful about what the case could prove and what it couldn't, what it didn't prove. Okay. And I'm just talking about the case now, not the historical reality. The historical reality is very clear. There are endless numbers of banana massacres. The most famous, perhaps, is the one in 1928 in Colombia in the same region that Garcia Marquez writes about in 100 Years, his incredible novel, 100 Years of Solitude. This case, however, only dealt with issues from 1997 to 2004. And the difference is that in 1997, Chiquita switches. Well, actually, we don't know what year they switched, but let's say 96, 97 in that area. They switch from paying all kinds of armed forces, from military forces to the FARC, which was a leftist organization, to the AUC, to only paying the AUC. Because you can see in its memos, which the discovery gave access to in the trial, you can see in their memos as they start to realize that the AUC is formed, first of all, by domestic large banana producers. And secondly, that it has the same interests, if I can put it that way, as Chiquita, which is you want land and you want labor. And so the switch is then. And in that moment, it's a very dramatic one, by the way, because what happens is the highest ranking officer of Chiquita in Colombia, in its Colombian subsidiary, which was called Banadex, the highest ranking member meets with Carlos Castaño. Now, Carlos Castaño is the head of the AUC. The AUC is now uniting all kinds of right-wing paramilitaries because it doesn't believe that the Colombian military is doing a good enough job in ending what they consider to be communist demands of for land reform and better labor treatment. So you have this meeting between these two guys. One is a corporate head in Colombia of Chiquita, and the other one is on every terrorist list in Europe, in the United States. He's deemed a terrorist in the United States, Carlos Castaño. He's the founder of the AUC and the person who puts it all together, and he's also a major drug dealer and a person who has been involved in massacre after massacre, most of which he publicizes himself. He actually goes on all the time, we killed all these people, we did this, we did that. So there's not any question about who you're meeting with. Now, that meeting is very key because that meeting is the meeting that Chiquita says is extortion. The problem is they have absolutely not a single document, nothing that shows extortion. And what the Chiquita team deemed that as, instead of extortion, they deemed it a pact with the devil. In other words, an agreement between the AUC and Chiquita, that they would work together to support the AUC in many different ways as it committed these atrocities to force small farmers, peasants, and labor union organizers, but also just regular people off their land. So this is, they're just pushing people off. Chiquita is snapping up the land. And that's the story behind this trial.
And what kind of deaths? How many deaths are we talking about over what period of time?
We don't know because when things are this violent, and this is true not just for Colombia, but for other places, you can't really tell. I think this is it's a very important question you asked because the plaintiffs in the Chiquita case were what we call bellwether plaintiffs. That means they stand for a group of plaintiffs. You can't bring 5,000 Colombians to Florida to testify. It's not feasible for all kinds of reasons that you as a lawyer know better than I do. So what you have to do is, in this case, what was innovative in this case, and will be in the next case as well, is to develop bellwethers. Bellwethers are people that you can prove, number one, their family members or whoever was killed. These are all extrajudicial killings. Whoever was killed by the AUC. And then you get into the issues of did Chiquita aid the AUC, et cetera, et cetera. It's very important that we don't know how many people died. We do know that in the banana producing regions, close to 1 million people left that area because of the violence. We also know that the stories of violence are just absolutely horrific. And, when you read them, or you look at the human rights violations against banana workers, I had a chart that I put in, which was from 1984 to 2010, and it just shows you the numbers are just really huge. And so I don't know. I can't give you an absolute figure because remember, the violence is not only against union and unionized groups. Those are some of the best documented. But it's also against anybody who lives in the region. So it's
So you're
very
talking
hard.
about tens of thousands of people.
I don't know the, as I said, I don't know the exact number. I just know that our working definition for the bellwethers was 5,000. And I can't really go beyond that. That's
Sure.
not that I think that that's all there is by any means. I don't. I think it's much greater than that. And in a trial, as you know, Mimi, you have to be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, or at least more likely than not. And some of these things are very, very difficult because you don't keep good records when people are fleeing a region. You don't have good documents. You don't
Sure.
know who used to live there. They don't come back. They don't come back to reclaim their land later, although there is a movement to do that now in Colombia. But we're talking, decades later.
But let me
So,
ask you this, and
yeah,
actually
sure.
the standard in a civil case is not beyond a
More.
reasonable doubt, it's a
Right.
preponderance of the evidence, actually. So in the time that we have left, why is this such a monumental case? Why is this a landmark verdict? And can it be employed, as you indicated earlier, suggested, to other environmental-based crimes, forced labor violations under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and various other human rights violations by U.S. companies that are either have subsidiaries there that we need to lift the veil on and show what our own real complicity is, or outright manifestations of U.S. companies engaging in terror tactics against the lands, the resources, and the peoples of a foreign nation. So tell us what we gained from this, because you had a
I think
major
we,
role.
no, I didn't have a major role. This was, I want to say the first thing we gained from it
You're being
is,
modest, you did, but.
no. I really think that the first thing that we gained from it is understanding that you cannot set a precedent, and I will talk about the precedent in a second, like this without teamwork. And teamwork means this is a huge trial. It went on for 17 years. There was no money. I mean, it had 15 different, I'm not 15, but it had four different jurisdictions. It was a nightmare. It was between Colombia and the United States. And it just, this is not an easy trial. So what really mattered is the teamwork that was set up originally by Earth Rights International. So you have an NGO that is committed to this, that is committed to finding lawyers who will do this work either pro bono or put up some of the funds to carry out a 17-year trial against a multinational that has a lot of money. So it's very important that everybody played a role in this. And without that kind of teamwork, you would never, ever have this victory. So that the first thing I would say
and
is
we have
should,
about a minute or two left,
okay.
So we're
the
going
second
to
thing
have to
I would
deliver
say,
that closing argument quickly.
Yeah, the second thing I would say is legally, this was not an alien torts case. This was a new case, which is called transitory tort doctrine. It's based on that. And that means that we can begin to use the laws of other countries to hold accountable multinationals that actually have their headquarters in the United States. Now, that's just a huge thing because it opens up a whole new legal realm for human rights people. And finally, I would just say that it is as Forbes said, it's a shot against the bow of multinationals that think they can behave in ways that are illegal, unethical, because they're outside the United States. This is the first time that we've said, no, you can't. And let's see how much that lesson holds and how much it travels.
Well, thank you for your expertise and thank you for your morality, humanity, and political sensitivity in having been there all these many years. And we're going to have you back to talk about some of the other work that you've done in this respect. So we hope that Chiquita and other multinationals will be brought to toe finally, and most importantly, that punitive damages and the like will prevent these kinds of exploitation. But if not, we have folks like you who have built up a practice now and expertise, and we will be unrelenting in persevering and prosecuting to the fullest extent we can, politically and legally, for those people who have been abused. Terry Call, thank you for the work you've done. And all of us, we have to pay attention to the things that we
consume.
What
you eat. Pay attention to what you eat.
Absolutely.
And remember that it's easier to hold banana companies accountable than it is those who exploit oil or lithium.
Yeah, and we're going to have you back to talk about that because you've done a lot of work on that. We've been speaking with Terry Call. Thank you so much for revealing how Chiquita went bananas, hiring death squads to kill its own workers, theft the land, and we now have a verdict of guilty. Thank you, Terry. You've been listening to Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we say educate, agitate, and organize. Organize for a free Palestine, yes, from the river to the sea.